Sometime later, Hawk, Fisher, and Chance sat on their horses in a high place looking out over the city. There was chaos in the streets, and here and there a thick plume of black smoke from an out-of-control fire. Most of the guards were out on the streets, struggling to maintain order while not looking terribly hard for the people responsible for it all. Chappie sat beside the horses, chewing happily on the last of something with a lot of feathers.
Time to leave.
Yes, I think we've done as much damage as we can for one day.
Won't you be at all sad to leave this place? I mean, it's been your home for 10 years now.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
No.
They had one last stop to make before they could leave. The retreat of an ex-con man Hawk and Fisher had known for some time. Zeb Toombs lived in a quiet little house in a quiet little cul-de-sac in a very respectable area that knew nothing of his checkered past. Hawk approached Toombs' door.
He's not in. He's gone away, and he was never here anyway. Toombs, never heard of the man. Stay away. This is a plague house, and it's haunted by a ghost with tuberculosis.
Open the door, Zeb. You wouldn't want Fisher to have to kick it in, would you?
A distinguished-looking gentleman in his early 50s, resplendent in a fine embroidered smoking jacket, looked quickly up and down the deserted street and then glared at Hawk and Fisher.
You leave my door alone. I just had it painted. What did I do to deserve you back in my life? I haven't shot an albatross in ages. Oh, hell, come in. Come in before the neighbors notice, if they haven't already. Some days you can't walk down this street for twitching curtains. And wipe your feet!
Hawk led the way in, followed by Fisher, who nodded cheerfully to Toombs as she barged past him. Chance and Chappie brought up the rear. Toombs gave the dog a hard look, but said nothing. He waved his guests into the parlor, a comfortable room furnished with all the ill-gotten gains of a long career of separating the more gullible well-off from as much cash as Toombs could carry away in one journey. He'd done very well for himself in Haven, until he made the mistake of trying to sell shares in a silver mine to Commander Dubois, who didn't know much about mining, but was pretty sure you didn't find much of it going on in land he knew to have been underwater for 100 years. He set Hawk and Fisher on Toombs's trail, and that was that.
What do you want with me now? I've been good. It's been ages since I've done anything creative.
We're leaving Haven.
Allow me to be the first to wave goodbye.
But we need disguises first.
Good idea. If I were you, I'd want to look like someone else too. And anything I can do to help you on your way will be a real pleasure.
He glanced dubiously at Chappie, and then at Chance.
Your wolf is housebroken, isn't he?
If one more person calls me a wolf, I'm going to do something really distressing to him.
Oh my!
Toombs backed away quickly and put a heavy chair between him and the dog.
If it was up to me, you could be anything you want, but trust me, the teeth, claws, and fur are a bit of a giveaway.
Never mind, Chappie, he's just being himself. Concentrate on coming up with disguises for Hawk and me. What have you got?
Well, it's not as easy as it might have been, since certain people made me dispose of all my old gear. But I do just happen to have a transformation spell I was saving for a rainy day.
They don't work on us. We were exposed to a hell of a lot of wild magic in the long night, and these days any change spells just slide right off us.
Toombs blinked a few times.
You're full of surprises, aren't you, Captain? But I've nothing else to offer you except the standard makeup and hair dyes.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other, and then they looked at Chance, who studied them both thoughtfully.
You really don't look much like your official portraits, and it has been a long time. I think the scars and the eye patch are really all you need, Your Highness.
Highness?
Shut up, Toombs.
Yes, Your Highness. Shutting up right now.
What about me?
Dye your hair black and no one will know you. Nearly everyone knew you back then is dead. The few still alive probably only ever saw you briefly and from a distance. The dye should be enough.
Is she Your Highness too?
Shut up, Toombs, or I'll let the wolf have you.
Dog! I'm a dog!
Dying Fisher's long mane of hair jet black was a messy but fairly quick process, and there was no denying afterward she looked different. She studied herself in Toombs's bathroom mirror, scowling fiercely with her new dark eyebrows, and then looked back at Hawk lounging in the doorway.
Tell me the truth, or you're dead meat.
You look very striking.
Hawk worked to keep all traces of a smile off his face.
And most importantly, nothing at all, like Julia. Now, I really think we should be going. The guard will probably do everything they can to avoid finding us, but you can bet all the villains we didn't have time to get around to will be lining up for one last chance at us before we leave.
Fisher nodded and followed Hawk back into the parlor. Chance kept a straight face while Toombs openly boggled. Chappie hid behind Chance's legs.
So, what now?
We ride for the city limits at full speed, and we don't stop for anything. How far do we have to travel to reach the rift? More than a day?
I have a special charm from the mages. Once we're outside the city, I can summon the rift opening right to us. Then all we have to do is ride through, and we'll be back in the forest again.
Simple as that. Assuming we get out of the city alive. We've made a lot of enemies here over the years.
For all the right reasons.
Are you people ever going to leave? All this talk of enemies is making me very nervous. I can think of any number of people who cheerfully firebomb this whole street just to get at you. I've sometimes felt that way myself.
Relax, we're on our way.
Don't I get any payment for my hard-earned expertise?
What do you think?
Hawk, Fisher, and Chance rode their horses full tilt through the crowded streets, Chappie loping along beside them, while arrows and knives and blunt objects of all kinds rained down from above. Spells and curses crackled helplessly on the air, repelled by the protective mannequin peering out of the top of Hawk's backpack. People threw themselves out of the horse's way. The few guards they encountered looked the other way, determined not to get involved. Hawk and his companions ran the gauntlet, come and gone so quickly, no one could touch them. But the mannequin was burning out fast, and the horses couldn't maintain such a pace for long. And more horsemen were taking up the chase behind them.
Come on, fella. We'll be there soon. Come on.
Hawk led the way, trusting to his extensive knowledge of the city streets to get him out of Haven by the fastest possible route. The streets flashed by, buildings and crowds nothing more than a blur. He could see the edge of the city from where he was, but he couldn't get at it. There was no direct route, only a maze of narrowing streets and alleyways. And then he rounded a corner at top speed and saw that the end of the street ahead was blocked by a massive barricade. Armed men stood waiting before it. They'd clearly dragged all the furniture out of the surrounding tenements and piled it up in one great impassable wall. Hawk kept going. He couldn't even slow down with the pursuing riders so close behind. The barricade drew closer. No way around, too high to jump. The jagged ends of broken chair legs thrust out of the barricade like so many vicious spikes. And Hawk remembered another barricade in the long night of the Demon War, in the last great battle outside the forest castle. The blue moon burned sickly overhead, blue and diseased, and the only barricade between Prince Rupert and the Legion of Demons was the increasingly high pile of his own fallen dead comrades. Fisher pulled alongside him, reining her horse in close as they raced forward.
See that barricade?
Of course I see it.
Any ideas?
Not yet.
We'll have to jump it.
We can't. It's too high.
We don't have any choice.
And then someone stuck a blazing torch into the mostly wooden barricade, and the whole thing went up in soaring flames.
All right, we won't jump it. We need an idea, Hawk. And you'd better come up with it pretty soon, because that barricade is getting really close now.
Another minute, and they'd be on top of it. Hawk's horse was already beginning to slow, despite his urging, as the flames leapt high into the sky. Quick glances around showed that the only side streets were blocked with armed men. Someone had put a lot of thought into this. There was no way out, so if you can't go through or around...
Follow me!
Hawk steered his horse sharply to the left. Right in front of them was a bulky steel fire escape, leading up to the second story and the roof. The horse took one look and tried to balk.
Sha! Sha!
Hawk drove him on. The horse plunged forward, its steel-clad hooves striking sparks as it clattered up the fire escape. The whole structure shook under the sudden weight, but held. Fisher and Chance urged their mounts after Hawks, and Chappie brought up the rear. Two armed men darted out of the shadows at the base of the fire escape.
They're getting away! At least kill a wolf! You kill the wolf!
Chappie grinned as he followed the horses up the steps and onto the sloping tiled roof. Slates and tiles shattered under the horses' hooves as they plowed on, leaping recklessly from one roof to another. This high up, Hawk could see the city boundary clearly, agonizingly close. He spotted another fire escape plunging steeply down to the ground and headed his horse toward it. He could hear Fisher and Chance following close behind.
Oh my! Oh my!
They thundered down the fire escape and slammed back into the street again, the blazing barricade safely behind them. Hardly anyone stood between the riders and the edge of the city. No one really thought they'd get this far. One last heavy-duty curse crackled on the air around them, and all of Hawk's hair stood on end. He could feel the magic struggling to find a hold on him, slow and vile and malevolent, but the charm in his backpack still protected him. And then the mannequin, waving its raffia arms, burst into flames. The curse had been deflected, but their protection was gone. Hawkenfisher and Chance left the city port of Haven at a gallop and never once looked back. Chappie was still right there with them, tongue lolling out the side of his mouth as he panted for breath. He was built more for stamina than speed. Before them lay the ragged coastline and the sea, and a whole lot of open ground. If horsemen came out of the city after them, there was nowhere they could hide or defend, and their horses were too exhausted to run much further anyway. Hawk looked across at Chance.
We need the rift, now!
We're too close to the city, I need a few more minutes!
Fisher pulled in close beside Hawk on his other side.
So, we're really going back. Back to the castle and the court and all its intrigues and formalities. At least Haven was open and honest in its evils.
The Forest Castle was my home.
We're not going back to stay, are we? Tell me we're just going back to solve Harold's murder.
If my duty calls.
What about your duty to me?
Before Hawk could answer, Chance seized their attention by drawing from his pack a hand of glory. A severed and preserved human hand cut from a hanged man right after his execution. The fingers turned into candles. Old magic. Bad magic. The kind that damns your soul. The Hand of Glory could open any lock, find hidden treasures, reveal concealed doors. Hawkenfisher watched intently as the five candle fingers lit themselves, burning with a warm yellow flame. From behind them came the sound of hot pursuit, but none of them looked back. Just being this close to a Hand of Glory was like having someone drag their fingernails across your soul. Chance drew the hand in a circle, and everything changed. Sunlight vanished, and darkness slammed down. They were riding through the gloom now, and the stars were out. Night became day, and the world split open before them, space itself cracking apart to reveal an endless tunnel lit with its own eerie silver light. Hawk lived this before, when the High Warlock used his teleport spell. He forced his almost hysterical horse on into the tunnel, and the others were right behind. They all felt, as much as heard, the tunnel entrance slam shut behind them. They slowed their horses to a walk in the tunnel. Time and space meant different things here, and with the tunnel closed, they were safe from pursuit. Being in the Silver Tunnel was like being back in the place where you were before you were conceived and earthed in flesh, so it should have come as no surprise when the dead came to talk with Hawkenfisher. Ghosts from the past they had turned their backs on. To Prince Rupert came his dead father, King John. He seemed old and tired and defeated. And when he looked at his son, his gaze was full of sadness.
My sons have always been a disappointment to me.
Then he was gone, replaced by the awful pale face of the demon prince, who smiled his terrible smile.
I have always been well served by traitors.
The champion came and walked beside Rupert, still bloody with his death wounds, and wouldn't look around.
Courage can only take you so far.
And finally Harold approached, dead Harold, who looked at him accusingly.
You always said I'd make a better king than you.
Julia, never trust anyone, especially those you love.
Julia's dead friend Badine, his chest still pierced with the death wound she gave him, gave her a friendly nod.
Everyone's a traitor to someone.
And then there came the dragon, dead and gone and consumed by fire, who studied her with the empty eye sockets of his charred skull.
Magic is going out of the world, but that doesn't mean it's lost.
Finally to Julia came Harold, who was once her betrothed and her lover, if not her love. He held her hand in his cold, dead fingers.
I did love you, Julia, in my way.
The ghosts spoke in calm, distant voices, suffused with the knowledge that only comes to the dead. Rupert and Julia's hearts hammered painfully in their still-living breasts as they remembered things and feelings they thought long lost. Somehow they knew they were being told things they needed to know, but the presence of so much death diminished them. With their memories of loss and failure and things left unsaid but never really forgotten, the living were not meant to hear the dead, because the human heart cannot bear too much truth. The Silver Tunnel opened up and threw them back into the real world. The forest rushed into being before and around them. Bright green with the lush foliage of summer, the great trees stood tall and proud. The air was full of the rich scents of grass and earth and mulch. It smelled like home. Hawk reined his horse to a halt as the Silver Tunnel disappeared behind him, and the others stopped with him. He sat there for a moment. Hawk turned and glared at Chance.
Why didn't you warn us?
Chance looked back at him uncertainly.
I'm sorry. I was given to understand you'd traveled through the Silver Tunnel before.
Not that. You should have told us. You should have told us about the dead.
What dead?
Chappie looked quickly about him.
They came and talked to me. Ghosts of the past, long since buried.
The dead. Desperately trying to warn me about something.
Chance shook his head slowly.
No one has ever reported such side effects before. The rift is just a means of transport. Hundreds of thousands of people have gone back and forth through the rift, and no one ever reported hearing voices. Perhaps it's your exposure to the wild magic again.
And perhaps it's just us, still haunted by our past and the things we had to do in it.
Who spoke to you? What did they say?
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
Maybe we'll tell you. Someday.
That's far enough. You will have to declare everything you've brought with you from the south before you can be allowed to proceed any further.
They all looked around, and there were half a dozen tents and 20 or so heavily armed men. Hawk and Fisher looked at Chance.
Customs and immigration.
Welcome home. Nothing ever changes.
Hawk looked at the customs and immigration people and just knew he wouldn't get along with them. The owner of the officious voice, a portly specimen dressed in a bright and gaudy uniform of gold and russet, had the upturned nose and supercilious scowl of every civil servant who knows he's been promoted well past his point of competence, but is damned if he'll admit it. The kind of official who knows every rule in the rulebook that will stop you getting what you both know you're really entitled to, all the while saying he's only doing his job. And that it's more than his job's worth to make an exception in your case, unless, of course, you might be willing to grease the wheel a little. The armed men backing him up were wearing traditional forest trappings and colors, but their voices, as they murmured together, had distinct Redheart accents. Mercenaries. Certainly, they were experienced enough to recognize a possible threat in Hawk and Fisher, and they all had their hands somewhere near their swords as they watched the customs officer advance importantly on the new arrivals. Chance dismounted and stood patiently beside his horse. After a moment, Hawk and Fisher joined him, just to show willingness. Chappie scratched vigorously at a flea until Chance nudged him hard with a foot. The customs official stopped just in front of Hawk and tried to stare him down, which was his first mistake. When Hawk calmly refused to be stared down, the official turned his stare on Fisher, which was his second mistake. Fisher glared back at him so venomously that the official fell back a step. Somewhat desperately, he turned to the third new arrival, and immediately his manner changed. A wide, ingratiating smile took over his face, and he bowed low to Chance.
Oh, Sir Quester, forgive me for not recognizing you immediately. Customs Inspector Ponsonby Stout at your service. The whole kingdom has been anxiously awaiting your return, but no one expected you back so quickly. Did you find them? Have you brought back our beloved prince and princess?
He looked eagerly past Chance, ignoring Hawk and Fisher, as though Rupert and Julia might be hiding behind them somewhere. He'd clearly already dismissed the scruffy figures of Hawk and Fisher as being unworthy of his expectations. Hawk didn't know whether to feel relieved or insulted. The mercenary soldiers took a new interest in what was going on and strolled forward. Some bowed politely to Chance, some didn't.
The prince and princess will not be returning to the forest land. They have instead sent these two personages in their place to investigate King Harold's murder. They are Hawk and Fisher, guard captains from the southern city-state of Haven.
Haven? Never heard of it.
Stout looked reluctantly back at Hawk and Fisher and tried out his best sneer on them.
But if they're from the south, they'll have to be inspected for forbidden contraband and pay all relevant taxes and duties on whatever they've brought with them. You, Hawk, show me your travel documents.
They don't have any. I brought them through the rift myself, bypassing southern customs by use of the Magus charm. As Quester, I vouch for them both.
Oh, this is all very irregular.
Stout seemed quite pleased at having found something over which he could exercise his authority. He sneered condescendingly at Hawks and Fisher's admittedly grubby outfits, then his gaze fell on their bulging backpacks.
I want both of those packs opened, right now. I have to be sure they don't contain any of the proscribed items of contraband.
Hawk turned to Chance, ignoring Stout.
What counts as contraband?
Practically everything these days. Let me handle this, Hawk.
But by now Stout had spotted the burned-out mannequin protruding from the top of Hawk's backpack, and his eyes bulged excitedly.
Sorcery! Magical paraphernalia? You must know that trafficking such items across the rift is forbidden, Sir Questa. This is very serious indeed. Who knows what else such people might have about their persons?
Stout gestured importantly for the armed men to come even closer. They did so, clearly pleased at the prospect of a little excitement. Stout smiled unpleasantly at Hawk and Fisher while addressing his mercenaries.
I want both their bags searched, and I want these two strip-searched. Be very thorough, gentlemen. I don't like the look of these two at all.
Chance covered his face with his hand.
Oh, no.
Fisher looked at Hawk.
Just how messy do you think we should make this?
Minimum necessary. There's still time for everyone to be reasonable.
Strip them!
Hawk and Fisher's casual manner and refusal to be at all intimidated infuriated Stout.
I want a full-body cavity search, followed by a strong purge, just in case they've swallowed anything.
One of the mercenaries reached out an eager hand toward Fisher's bosom, and as soon as it landed, she punched him right between the eyes. His head snapped back and he hit the ground like a falling tree. Two more mercenaries reached for her, and Hawk flattened them both before they even knew he was there.
So much for reason.
Ah, what the hell? There's only 20 of them.
Don't kill them, please! Don't kill them! They're only doing their job. Oh, God, the queen will have my balls for this.
The other mercenaries were already surging forward, swords in hand, and Hawk and Fisher went to meet them, weapons at the ready. It was a short and not especially bloody battle, as Hawk and Fisher were still on what passed for their best behavior. It's actually quite difficult to stop a man just by wounding or disarming him, especially when he's doing his very best to kill you. But Hawk and Fisher had years of experience in bringing in suspects more or less alive. Not too much later, 20 semi-conscious or heavily bleeding mercenaries sat together, holding their heads while they tried to remember what day it was, and the customs officer looked on with bulging eyes. Hawk and Fisher examined their work with quiet satisfaction.
Strong first impressions are important.
You have to be firm.
They turned to look at Stout, and all the color drained from his face. He would clearly have liked to fall back several steps, but his legs were shaking too much. Hawk smiled at him.
We don't do customs. We also don't do taxes or duties or any kind of strip search that isn't entirely consensual. Now go and sit down with your little soldier friends and don't bother us again, or Fisher and I will validate your credentials with something large and heavy and pointed. Go.
The customs official went. Chance shook his head slowly and gestured urgently for Hawk and Fisher to join him a little distance away. Hawk and Fisher did so, cleaning the blood from their weapons with dirty pieces of rag. Chappie lay down by the subdued mercenaries and kept a hopeful eye on them, just in case.
That was really not a good idea. Those soldiers were operating on the Queen's authority, and so was Stout. He may be a prick, but he's the Queen's prick. I can't believe I just said that. Look, the point is, you have very little authority here in the forest. You're not guard captains anymore, and you've refused to claim your royal prerogatives. So all you have left to back you up is your letter of intent, purportedly from Prince Rupert. That, and my support as King's Quester, will buy you some leeway, but you can't go on acting like this. You just don't have the justification, and there's a limit to how much I can protect you. You're on your own here.
Best way.
If I learned anything from my time in the Forest Kingdom, it's that you have to come on strong, or they'll walk right over you. If Isabel and I act as though we have the authority to take names and kick asses, everyone else will let us. We are Rupert and Julia by proxy, and people will respect that as long as we act the part.
And if they don't?
Then we start throwing people off the castle battlements until they do.
I wish I thought you were joking. I can't promise to protect you. I'm only the Questor.
That's all right. We've had lots of experience protecting ourselves. You worry about who's going to protect the court from us.
Oh, I am. Trust me. I am.
Leaving burning customs tents behind them, they journeyed on through the forest. The forest castle was still several days' hard riding away, but Hawk and Fisher were in no great hurry to get there. It had been a long time since they'd seen the rich colors and splendor of the forest, and they were enjoying the slow return of old memories. Their horses easily followed the open path, and they were free to just sit back and look around them, drinking in the sights and sounds. It was summer, and the great tree branches hung heavy with greenery. The trees soared up into the sky, their highest reaches bending over to form an interlocked canopy through which golden sunlight fell in thick shafts, full of swirling dust motes. The air felt comfortably warm, almost drowsy, and full of the clean, fresh smells of living things.
God, this is a change after Haven. No more soot and sewers and sorcery, just the woods. Ah, it smells like home.
You're right. I'd forgotten how alive and uncomplicated the forest is. Oh, it's a hell of an improvement over Haven, with all its stink.
Trust us, we noticed.
Chappie padded along beside the horses.
Place smelled so bad I was beginning to wish my nostrils would heal over. I mean, I like a good roll in some muck as much as anyone, but God in heaven, there are limits.
It's good to be back. Despite everything that happened here, this is still my home.
I never really thought of it that way. The forest is only special to me because that's where I met you. I'm from Hillsdown, remember?
Hawk turned in the saddle and looked at her uncertainly.
We could go visit Hillsdown afterward if you want.
No, there's nothing for me there. What memories I have aren't happy ones. You're my home, Hawk. Wherever you are.
They smiled at each other, then rode on for a while, enjoying the sharp staccato singing of the birds and the endless, low drone of insects. The horses meandered along, happy to be taking their time, while Chappie made brief darting journeys off the trail into the trees in search of food or amusement. Chance kept quiet, watching in what he hoped was an unobtrusive way as Hawk and Fisher remembered who they had once been. For the first time, he really began to see them as the legendary Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, who saved the whole forest from almost unimaginable horrors and evils. They seemed almost to grow in stature as their memories came back to them.
I know this place. I've been here before on my way to Dragon's Lair Mountain. I was so determined to prove myself by finding and slaying a dragon. I thought that if I could do that, all the problems of my life would be solved. I'd be appreciated, respected. And all the rest of my life would be sorted out. I was so young then.
We both were. And I was so frightened of my father. Duke Alric of Hillsdown, undisputed monarch of all he surveyed, except maybe his own family. I grew up with 8 sisters, all of us searching for our own identity by challenging our father in different ways. When he sent me off to die in the dragon's cave, I was almost relieved. It meant the worst was over. And I'd never have to be scared of him again. My father could be terrible when he chose to be. At least there was a chance the dragon might be kind and kill me quickly instead of by inches, like my father was doing. I wonder if I'll still be scared when I meet him again at Forest Castle. It's been 12 years, and I'm so much more than I was then. But still, do we ever really see our fathers differently than when we were children?
Oh, I think so. My father and I never really got to know each other till I became an adult. And we became better able to appreciate and understand each other. I suppose that's true for lots of people. You never talked much about your father before. It's hard to believe you were ever afraid of anyone.
You never knew Duke Alric. Wish I never had either.
Don't you worry about your father, Isabel. If he even looks at you funny, I'll kick him up one side of the court and down the other.
Fisher looked at him fondly.
You would too, wouldn't you?
Damn right.
You worry me. Please remember that Duke Alric is an honored guest of the Forest Court, and as such has been promised all diplomatic courtesies and full protection from all forms of harm and harassment.
That's all right. I didn't promise him anything. Don't look so gloomy, Chance. We know how to behave diplomatically if we have to.
Exactly. We didn't kill any of those customs soldiers, did we?
And that's your idea of being diplomatic, is it? Not actually killing anyone?
Well, mostly, yes.
Chance looked at the trail ahead of him.
If I had any sense at all, I'd turn around and ride away right now.
They rode on through the forest. Days and nights passed, and all was quiet and peaceful. They met no one, but Chappie always found fresh game from somewhere. They ate and slept well under the forest canopy in the starry night sky. Bubbling streams ran fresh and clear. Under the calm and pleasant summer days, Hawk and Fisher began to relax, almost against their will. They'd never been able to let their guard down in Haven, even when barricaded inside their own quarters. Chance saw the slow change in them, like soldiers home from the war at last, and approved. It was all going well, until they came to the borders of the Darkwood. The Darkwood, the one place in the forest where the sun never rose, where the trees were dead and rotting. And nothing lived but demons. The Darkwood returned to its original boundaries after the blue moon passed and the long night collapsed. but it was an ancient place and could never be entirely reclaimed. Hawk reined in his horse and sat there for a long time, staring into the darkness hung like a curtain before him. The day ended abruptly in a straight line. The impenetrable dark turned aside the daylight with contempt. A cold breeze gusted eternally out of the blackness, carrying with it the stench of corruption and death. Hawk's horse wanted to back away from the dark and the smell, but Hawk wouldn't let it. 12 years since last he looked upon the dark wood, but now he was back, and the horror in his heart rose as fresh as yesterday. Fisher moved her horse in close beside him, knowing what he was feeling. They both journeyed through that long night, and they still carried the scars on their souls.
Why did you bring us here, Chance? We didn't need to see this.
There was a cold and dangerous edge in her voice that Chance had never heard directed at him. He paused a moment to be sure his voice would be calm and measured when he answered.
We had to pass this way to reach the forest castle, and I thought we might perhaps use it as a shortcut. Just passing through the edge would save us 2 days' journey.
You've never been through the Darkwood, have you?
Hawk did not look away from the darkness before him.
Well, no. It's forbidden. But you'd been through it so many times, I thought you might want to...
No. I have nothing to prove to myself anymore. We go around.
We go around.
They turned their horses aside and rode around the boundary of the Darkwood. The cold and silent blackness frightened the horses. They kept their heads turned away from it. Hawk kept his head turned away, too. In his youth, a barrier stood between the forest and the Darkwood, the Tanglewood. But that was long gone, destroyed in the Demon War. No warning stood now to give you a chance to prepare yourself. Just a sudden transition from light, life, and living things to the soul-destroying horror of the endless dark. Hawk could still remember his first journey through the Darkwood, along with his then-companion, the unicorn named Breeze. He recalled how close it came to overturning his reason. In the cold and rotten heart of the Darkwood, Hawk encountered a spiritual darkness, a stain on his mind and on his soul. Hawk carried the mark of it with him still. Even after the driving back of the long night, many years passed before Hawk and Fisher could bear to sleep without a nightlight.
I'm sorry.
Chance rode on, disturbed by the brooding silence Hawk and Fisher fell into.
I should have realized how much this place would affect you. Of course, you must have terrible memories. Terrible. I should have understood.
You still don't. It's partly because we don't want to have to kill any more demons, now that we know what they are. Or were. But it's more than that. Asking us to go back into the dark is like asking us to re-experience our own deaths. Haven't you ever talked to anyone who went through the Darkwood?
Very few people will speak of it. The only real hero left from that time is the Landsgrave, Sir Robert Hawke. And he can get quite violent if anyone's dumb enough to raise the question with him. He's always happy to talk about his heroics during the Demon War and his close personal friendship with the legendary Prince Rupert, but...
We were never really friends. We went through a lot together, fought side by side against appalling odds, but I can't say I ever really knew the man. There wasn't time. I respected him, certainly. He was a brave man and a fine warrior. I even took his name for my own when I went south, but we were never friends.
Be that as it may, he parlayed that famous friendship with a legend into a strong political career. Everyone loves a hero. Can you tell me what it was like in the Darkwood?
Dark? Dark enough to break anyone.
I was here once before. This is where I met Chappie. The shaman had a vision, said he saw demons spilling out of the Darkwood. You made a hell of a fuss about it, so to shut him up, the king sent me to take a look. Just me, mind you, no soldiers or rangers for backup. Luckily, it turned out the shaman was only partly right. There was just the one demon. He'd sneaked out of the long night and was now lurking on the outskirts of a small town not far from here. The townspeople were terrified, naturally, but as far as I could tell, the demon hadn't caused any real damage yet. So I went to sort things out.
Chance paused for a moment, looking straight ahead, remembering.
I didn't want to kill it, not knowing what it had once been, but I was prepared to, if I had to, if I couldn't persuade or scare it back into the Darkwood where it belonged. I wasn't really sure what to expect. I'd never actually encountered a demon before, up close. But I figured, one demon out of the long night, how much trouble could it be?
Hell, some of the things we faced in the long night were bigger than houses.
And even the ones most like humans could still be real trouble. Where do you think I got these scars on my face?
I was just saying how I felt then. I soon learned better. I found the demon easily enough. Once darkness fell, there it was, sitting in the town cemetery, squatting before the tombstones and reading the names aloud. It was white as a shroud, naked as a grub, with a twisted form and a face that was as much human as not. It had long, curving nails on its hands and feet. It had trouble speaking because of all the fangs filling its mouth, but I could understand it. The demon made no move to attack as I approached. Instead, it just sat and studied me, as though trying to remember what I was. We talked for a while. The poor bastard had started to remember that it had once been human and lived in this town. It had come out of the long night in search of its memories, its past life. It just wanted to go home, basically. Of course, it couldn't be allowed to. It was still a demon with all its drives and appetites. Several pet cats and dogs had already disappeared. So far, it hadn't been able to remember exactly who it used to be, which was just as well. You can imagine the horror of its old family. This misshapen thing went hammering on their door, demanding to be let in. So I told the demon it had to go back where it belonged now, back into the Darkwood. Pointed out several of the headstones and read the names aloud in its thick, guttural voice. They were all members of the same family. Maybe the demon's family, back when it had been human, maybe not. It was still very confused. And then it turned and looked out over the sleeping town, and it started crying. I patted it on the shoulder, reassuringly, and suddenly it turned on me, all teeth and claws and vicious strength. I should have drawn my axe the moment I saw the damn thing, but it looked so pathetic. I hit the ground hard with the demon on top of me, and it didn't take me long to realize the demon was much stronger than I was. Its clawed hands fastened around my throat, and I couldn't breathe. I pulled at its wrists with all my strength and couldn't budge them. And then this huge, snarling fury came flying out of nowhere and slammed into the demon, knocking it off me. That's how I met Chappie.
What happened then? What happened with the demon?
I killed it. What else could I do? I couldn't let it stay anywhere near the town, and it would have been cruel to make it go back into the Darkwood, remembering what it had once been. So Chappie pinned it down, and I cut its head off. Afterward, it turned back into a human form, so I buried it in the cemetery, next to what might have been its family. No marker, of course. I never knew its name, and I couldn't ask in the town. It would only have upset people.
You did what you had to do. You had no choice. You didn't tell them the worst part, though. The demon had already dug up several graves in the cemetery and feasted on what it found there.
It just wanted to go home.
Well, but don't we all?
When we got back to the forest castle, they told me King Harold had been murdered in my absence. His enemies had come for him, and I wasn't there to protect him. I hadn't gone off after that demon.
The king would have died anyway. The king was protected by Sir Vivian and his guards and the bloody Magus's magical wards, and the killer still got to him. What could you have done to protect him that all those people couldn't?
I don't know. Because I wasn't there, I'll never know.
Not long after leaving the Darkwood behind, they came to a clearing Hawk recognized. He shouldn't have been able to. It looked like just another clearing, like so many they'd already passed through, but somehow he knew. He could feel the difference. He stopped his horse abruptly and looked about him. Fisher had to rein in her horse and come back to join him. Being in the lead, Chance didn't notice for a while.
Chance!
Chance spurred his horse into a lope to return to Hawk and Fisher. The birds sang, the grass grew thick and luxurious, the trees stood tall and proud. Just one more forest clearing.
You know what this place is, too, don't you, Isabel?
Of course. How could I not know?
Well, how about letting us in on the secret?
This is where we met the Demon Prince. In what was then the sick heart of the Darkwood. This is where I called down the rainbow to banish the darkness. This is where we emerged from the long night when the Darkwood fell back to its original limits. And this is where the High Warlock told me my father, King John, was dead.
Damn. This is the place? The songs and legends tell of it, but no one ever seemed to know exactly where it was.
Chance looked eagerly about him, trying to see what Hawk and Fisher saw, but all he saw was a forest clearing.
This is history. There should be, I don't know, a plaque or a shrine or something, so people could come here on pilgrimages.
No. Let it stay a legend. The reality would only disappoint them, just as it's disappointing you. You built this place up in your imagination till no reality could match what you saw in your mind's eye. This place isn't important. It's what we did here that matters.
And some of what we saw and did here are best kept to ourselves. We still have nightmares sometimes.
I would have given everything I had to have been a part of such an undertaking.
That's the legend talking.
Hawk's hand rose slowly to his face as though the old scars were bothering him.
Reality was somewhat different. You look at this clearing and see only awe and wonder in the triumph of the light. We look at it and remember horror and pain, and how close we came to losing everything. I saw my father betrayed by his oldest friend. I saw my Julia crippled by a living horror older than humanity. I saw death stare me in the face and grin. I called down the rainbow, and it was bright and glorious and wonderful beyond belief, but in the end, that's not what I remember.
We remember the dark. We always will.
Chance could hear the revulsion in their voices and looked around the clearing again, staring to see something of what they saw, but he couldn't. For the King's Quester, it was just a clearing. He decided to change the subject.
You said this is the last place you saw your father, Your Highness.
Hawk. I'm just Hawk now. But yes, he was alive when we banished the Demon Prince. He lived to see the Darkwood thrown back, but the strain was too much for him. He died here, and the High Warlock magicked the body away. He never said why, only that he had done what was necessary. And knowing what I know about my father and his part in the coming of the Long Night, I never questioned the High Warlock. I didn't think I wanted to know.
What you're hearing now isn't part of the legend, Chance. And if you're smart, you won't repeat any of it.
Of course not.
Though he agreed quickly, Chance harbored many questions he wanted to ask.
For a long time, I wasn't sure whether I really believed my father was dead. I never saw his body, and part of me didn't want to believe it, because I never got to say goodbye. But the more I hear about what's happened to the Forest Land, the clearer it is that King John has to be dead. There's no way he could stay hidden with so much going on. And he would have come back from the shores of death itself to avenge his murdered son if he could. So he's dead. Just like Harold, leaving me, the last of my line. There's Harold's son, Stephen, of course, but he's half hills down. I could be king if I chose. I have that right. Could be said to be my duty.
But you don't want to be king.
No, I don't.
Chance thought it was time to change the subject again.
There's no doubt about the High Warlock being dead, I'm afraid. The Magus told us when he came to court to announce himself the Warlock's chosen successor. King Harold needed to be sure the High Warlock was dead, so he sent some admittedly rather reluctant emissaries to the Dark Tower to check out the situation. They found the High Warlock dead in his chair and the tower deserted, so they collapsed the whole damned tower on top of him to be his cairn. Perhaps also in the hope that all that weight of stone would be enough to hold his spirit down and keep it from wandering.
Oh, I'm still pissed off about that, barbarians! It was my home, too!
So much death. No wonder we stayed away so long.
They rode on through the forest. More days passed. There were many areas of dead trees and dead land, places blighted by the fall of the Long Night that had still not recovered, perhaps never would. Trees stood with no leaves. Their dark trunks crumbled at the touch, rotted away from within. Whole clearings lay barren, the bare ground cracked and dry. Silent, because no living creature would enter these places, and even the birds and the insects avoided them. Old wounds that would never heal. The horses didn't want to enter these places either, and on the few occasions when there was no other choice, the riders had to keep a hard rein to prevent the horses from bolting. They tossed their heads, eyes rolling, and their hooves threw up dust and ashes where they walked. Some parts of the forest would take generations to recover, and some never would. Dotted here and there in the woods, in quiet clearings and open glades, they came across many small churches and shrines. Most were Christian, simple places for worship and celebration, but there were other shrines, too, for older gods and more ambivalent forces. The Long Night put the fear of God into the forest population. They took their comfort where they could find it. There were standing stones and crude altars, marking old places of power and the occasional genius loci. Old battlefields in the never-ending struggle between good and evil, or light and dark. Fresh garlands of flowers lay curled around ancient stones with fresh markings, along with simple prayers written on scraps of paper and weighted down with smooth stones on which open eyes had been painted. Prayers for good weather and better harvests, or just to keep the dark times at bay. The group even saw occasional small shrines for Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, and old King John, too, with flowers, simple offerings, and pleas for their return someday. Hawk found them touching, but Fisher just turned up her nose. Fisher believed God helps those who help themselves. They were heading into the more populated areas now, passing through the many new small towns and villages built to replace those lost or destroyed during the Demon War. Bright and shining with freshly quarried stone and new timber, the paint and plaster were still wet on the most recent additions. In the larger towns, new buildings sprouted up amongst the old like new flowers in an old garden. They were all lively, busy places, thronging with people, many of whom still had strong Red Heart or Hillsdown accents. The new arrivals made their mark in other ways, too, showing clearly in unfamiliar architectural styles and their own transplanted ways and traditions. Hawk found some of these alien ways upsetting in what should have been the heartland of his old home, but he did his best to hide it. Wherever they came from, they were forest people now. His people, if he decided to be king. So he smiled and nodded at the friendly faces and felt more of a stranger in this new forest land than they did. It was early evening when the rain came down, sudden and hard. Thunder rumbled directly overhead, and lightning flared blue-white in the darkening sky. They had come to a place where the trees were widely spaced, and there was no obvious shelter. The horses tossed their heads unhappily, and Chappie slunk in close beside Chance, his tail between his legs and his ears flattened, flinching with each new crash of thunder. Hawk spotted the ancient signpost, half hidden in tall grass, that pointed the way to the small town of Brecken Batch, and they moved down a narrow trail, already fast turning to mud under the driving rain. Chance was the only one with any rain gear, and he didn't have time to stop and put it on, so they were all pretty soaked when the flaring lightning showed them a squat stone tavern on the edge of town, the Starlight Inn. They stabled their horses in the modest lean-to beside the tavern and hurried inside, though Hawk paused to give the swinging sign a dubious look. The Starlight was a clear reference to the old Starlight Duke, who rebelled against a forest king long ago and split off his own territory to form what was now Hillsdown. In forest history, the Starlight Duke was an infamous traitor, and in Rupert's day, naming a forest inn after him would have been treason. Not surprisingly, the Starlight Inn turned out to cater mostly to Hillsdown immigrants.
Good evening. I'm Alan Chance, King's Quester. I hoped we might share some of your hospitality this evening.
It seemed the Quester's good reputation was known throughout the kingdom. Hawk and Fisher looked on, just a little jealous, as the inn's patrons made a fuss over Chance and gave him the best seat by the fire. The tavern owner produced jugs of hot mulled ale.
Now I won't hear of you going any further tonight. Not in such terrible weather. I have rooms available at very competitive prices, and I won't take no for an answer. Just a moment now. Hilda, bring dry clothes!
He turned to Hawk and Fisher.
Come now, let's make room for you and your wolf by the fire.
Chappie ignored the slight as he lay as close to the flames as he could get, steaming happily. Soon they were all dry, comfortable, and more able to take an interest in their surroundings. The crowd seemed pleasant enough, despite their Hillsdown accents. Chance and Fisher were more used to it, so Hawk just sat back and let them do most of the talking. He was more interested in studying the changes the immigrants brought with them, even to something as simple and basic as a tavern. Most obviously, he saw the sign of the fish everywhere instead of the cross, reminders that these people had their own separate church. Many of the drinks on offer behind the wooden bar were unfamiliar, and when hot food finally arrived, it consisted of traditional Hillsdown delicacies, most of which Hawk looked at dubiously. The main offering was a deer's entrails steamed in a sheep's stomach. Fisher attacked it ravenously, saying loudly that it had been a long time since she'd had a chance at such good food.
It's the spices that make all the difference. Eat up. This'll put hairs on your chest.
Why are you eating it?
Hawk prodded the steaming mound before him with a fork.
If you don't want it, I'll have it.
And now there's a surprise.
Chance ate his portion with no apparent problems, so Hawk reluctantly tried a small mouthful. He then decided he was rather hungry after all and did his best to eat without thinking too much about what he was actually chewing. The spices did make a difference. The innkeeper bustled over, a broad-shouldered and barrel-chested man who had clearly been a soldier at some time in his life.
Is all to your liking, Sir Questor. Here, let me stick the hot poker in your ale again. Warm it up some. And is there anything else your servants would be needing?
We are not his servants.
Oh, my apologies, sir. And what might you be, then?
His companions. We're on our way to the castle.
Good luck to you all, then, sir and madam. 'Tis a very unhappy place at present, so I've heard. What with the king so sudden dead, God bless him, and no one any clearer as to the who or why.
How did you feel about the king? I mean, he wasn't your king for long.
He was our king. We all swore allegiance to him when we first became forest citizens, and proud we were to do so. The old Duke, he ruled well enough in Hillsdown, I suppose, but he never really cared for his people or for what they thought of him. Wasn't a bad sort, really, as long as you paid your taxes on time and kept your mouth shut about things that didn't concern you. He mostly left you alone. But King Harold, he was a hero. Saved us all from the Long Night. A good man, so I've heard tell.
Do you find things better, then, here in the forest?
Well, yes and no, Your Honor. There's more land for every man, but that means more work in the tending of it. More freedom, I suppose, but the price of everything in the markets is a damn sight higher. And it doesn't feel like home here yet, if Your Honor understands me.
Yes, I think I do. This was my home, but I've been away a long time. And much has changed in my absence.
Change is in the air.
The innkeeper topped off their jugs with fresh ale.
With the king gone, God bless him, there's talk of politics everywhere. I mean, the queen does her best as regent, God bless and save her. But her son, Stephen, is many years off being a man's age. There are those saying we should seize the opportunity and make changes now while we can.
What sort of changes?
Any and all sorts, ma'am. News from the South tells of all kinds of political systems, and the idea of democracy is on every man's lips. Though every man seems to have his own idea of what that should mean. There's speeches and gatherings all over the place, and representatives from the rich and the powerful promising a lot in return for support. With the king gone and the queen so weakened, God bless them both, it seems like everyone's getting ready to toss their hats into the ring. And then there's Duke Ulric, of course. Supposedly, he's here to comfort the queen in her time of loss. But more likely, he's here to tell the queen what to do. And none of us like the sound of that. We came here to get away from the Duke.
The conversation went on for a while, as tavern conversations have a way of doing, going around and around with everyone chipping in, but never actually getting anywhere. Eventually, the talk wound down, and the tavern patrons left to go to their homes, lurching and bumping into each other. The innkeeper showed a by now very sleepy Chance, Hawk, and Fisher to their rooms. The quester got the best room in the tavern, of course, as befitted his stature and good reputation. But he did have to share it with Chappie, who still smelled distinctly damp. Hawk and Fisher got a small, pokey room that was little more than an attic. They wouldn't give the innkeeper the satisfaction of an objection, so they just smiled and nodded till he left, and only then looked unhappily about them. They saw a somewhat uncomfortable-looking bed, under a blanket that looked more used to covering a horse, an inch of candle in a pewter holder, a bucket in the corner whose smell told them exactly what it was for, and one tightly shuttered window. Hawk and Fisher stripped off their borrowed clothing in weary silence and finally cuddled together under the rough sheets. With the candle blown out, the room was pitch dark, save for the occasional flash of lightning that showed eerily around the edges of the shuttered window.
Does the dark bother you?
No, not as long as you're here.
Me neither.
They lay a while listening to the storm, unable to reach for them in all its fury.
We'll be at the castle in a few days.
Yes.
Then what do we do?
Play it by ear. This isn't the forest we remember. Things are different now. Odds are the castle will be different too, but it doesn't matter. We'll find Harold's murderer and see the guilty punished. Because we're Hawk and Fisher, and that's what we do.
Damn right.
Beyond the Blue Moon is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2000, Simon R. Green, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Ren Casey, Danny Gavigan, Eric Messner, Ted Stoddard, Michael John Casey, Catherine Aselford, Nanette Savard, Jeff Allen, David Coyne, Dylan Lynch, Colleen Delaney, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, Christopher Graybill, Yasmin Toison, Michael Glenn, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Forest Kingdom Saga theme was composed by Dan Sondak. Additional original music by Dan Sondak and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Beyond the Blue Moon, be sure to look for E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Tell me, Kip. If you've done bad things your whole life, but you die doing something good, do you think that makes up for all the bad?
No.
Me neither.
But it's better than nothing. Orcholum is merciful.
Wonder if you'll say that after they're done with your village.
Gavin Guile is the Prism, the most powerful man in the world. He is High Priest and Emperor, a man whose power, wit, and charm are all that preserves a tenuous peace. A peace that is slowly rotting from the inside out.
This is all that's left of what was once a great civilization. Statues of great men, broken by the pygmies who followed. Let me tell you something you already know. Something that all of you have believed, but no one dared to say. The wrong Guile won the Prism's war. They killed him because they were worried he would change everything. They feared him because Dazen Guile wanted to free us. Dazen knew that light cannot be chained.
As darkness slowly encroaches upon the land, Gavin receives a mysterious letter.
I'm dying, Gavin. It's time you meet your son, Kip. Lena.
As Gavin races to find his son, he learns of a new and dangerous threat to his empire. A man who calls himself King.
Your time is finished. Yours and the Chromarians. You're done! Light cannot be chained. Know this, Prism. We will take back what you've stolen. The horrors of your reign are almost at an end. And when it ends, I will be there. This, I swear!
With the death of his empire looming, Gavin will be forced to wage a war on multiple fronts. But little does he know, his assassin may be looking right before his very eyes.
You're stupid. stupid, stupid boy, Kip. But maybe a dull sword can go where a sharp one wouldn't be allowed. Don't you forget this. Don't listen to him, you hear me? He's a liar. You will not fail me in this, Kip. You learn, and then you kill him.
Yes, Mother?
Kip, if you ever loved me, avenge me. Swear it by your worthless soul, Kip.
I swear to avenge you, Mother, by my very soul.
Don't miss the beginning of the end in Brent Week's critically acclaimed new series, The Lightbringer Trilogy. Book 1, The Black Prism, Parts 1 through 3. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.